Elizabeth Elliot says that restlessness makes us cynical. We need certainty, surety, security, and that can only be found in God Himself because He's the one that's in charge of everything. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including God's Guidance, A Slow and Certain Light. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, discussing today the passage of time. We got a lot of Christmas form letters this past year, and I guess I should have made a count of how many of them began with how time flies. So many people begin that way and then explain six reasons why they couldn't get their Christmas letter out on time. We got a good many of them in January, and sometimes they come in February. And I think a couple of years ago, Lars wrote our Christmas letter, which is his job. He does the writing of the Christmas letter. I think he wrote it in April, following the Christmas that he intended it for. So everybody agrees that time flies, except, as far as I can figure out, the people who plan programs, banquet programs, speaking programs, seminars. They don't seem to have caught on to the fact that time flies. I will be invited to be the speaker at a banquet that is going to begin at, let's say, 6 o'clock. So at 7:15, they have given me a program telling me that there are going to be a few preliminaries and some music beginning at 7:15. The banquet is from 6, mind you, till 6:45. And then I will speak at 7 o'clock. Well, I don't usually believe them. The banquet might be over, if we're very lucky, by about 7:15 instead of 6:45. If it's a church supper instead of a hotel banquet, then we have to make some acknowledgments to the ladies in the kitchen. And have you ever tried to get the ladies out of the kitchen? You can get two of them, and then with a little bit of effort and wheedling, you can get number three. But then there's Sarah, who doesn't want to stick her head around the corner, and finally she does, wiping her hands on her apron and shrugging her shoulders and trying to look humble when they get the applause. So that takes another 6 minutes or so to get them all out there and say the words of acknowledgement. And then they really didn't intend to have to do this, but they really need to have just a short business meeting. We all know there isn't such a thing as a short business meeting any more than there's such a thing as a short guitar number. And so-and-so has been asked to give us a couple of guitar numbers. Well, I have yet to hear a short one. If somebody knows of one, I sure would be grateful to hear about it. Send me a copy, will you? And then somebody's going to give a testimony, and then there's one of these things called a multimedia presentation, and nobody has ever explained to me why multimedia has supplanted the word movies in our vocabulary, but sometimes it's just a plain old movie, as far as I can tell. It doesn't even have three screens, but it's a multimedia presentation, according to the program. And then you can see the consternation on people's faces as they look at the big clock on the wall, or they're looking at their watches, or they're comparing their watches with each other. And everybody is saying, how in the world did it get so late? And I sure hope the speaker makes it short. Well, I try to. I make it pretty short when it gets to be that late. But this is a few meditations on the passage of time. And I need to remember just now that for the Christian, nothing is a dead end. All endings are beginnings. And there are things that mark the passage of time for us. The day the baby goes off to kindergarten. The mother stands there and watches till the bus is completely out of sight and then goes back into the house crying her eyes out. Her baby has grown up. And then there's a time when he goes from kindergarten into first grade, and then first grade through elementary school and into junior high school, and each of these transitions is one more reminder that this child is pretty soon going to be an adult. And birthdays. Who needs birthdays, people say, when they get past about the 39th. But one of the things that brought very vividly and immediately to my attention that time was passing was the fact that the most beloved house in my life was going on the market. This was a few years ago. The house is something we called the cottage, a big old lodge that was built back in 1889 by my great uncle Will Prime in Franconia, New Hampshire, the White Mountains of New Hampshire. We spent our summers there, and we loved that place almost as if it were heaven. It was the scene of gloriously happy family vacations. I can remember leaving Philadelphia on the night Pullman, the Bar Harbor Express. And that, to me, was the most thrilling part of the whole summer, was leaving on that Pullman train. I remember the delirium of joy. I settled into the little berth, put my clothes into the little hammock, and fell asleep. And then we would be awakened in New Haven by the shifting of the cars as the train was divided into different sections. I would lift the blind next to my bed and see the brakeman passing with his lantern, watch the baggage trucks rolling by, and try to read in the dim light the romantic names on the freight cars in the yards. Seaboard Airline, Lackawanna Railroad, Chicago and Northwestern, route to the Phoebe Snow, Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe. I remember the jerking of the uncoupling and the satisfying crunch of the coupling, the hissing of steam and then the gentle rolling out of the station, the giant engine building up speed. It's a shame those steam trains are gone, isn't it? Until the clickety-click reached the rhythm that once again put me to sleep. In the morning, I would wake to see the Connecticut River Valley, and it wasn't long before we pulled into the little station in Littleton, New Hampshire. There my grandfather would be with his big Buick. He would drive us the 8 miles to Franconia, and my stomach would begin to tighten with joy as I knew that I was going to catch the first glimpse of the two brick chimneys as we crossed the Gale River Bridge. And then, as we turned up the driveway, I could see the beloved house, the breakfast table set in the sun on the front porch. The porch ran all the way around the house, and we would always race around as fast as we could. The sound of footsteps would be hurrying from the kitchen. The sound of the creaking boards was exactly the same as it was always supposed to be, and I remember the creak of the hinges on this massive front door. The story was told that Uncle Will had bought the lock and the key before he built the house, and the key was 8 inches long. So I guess he had to construct the door on a comparable scale. We kids would have a race around the porch to see if the little cart that we always played with was still in its place. And then we would look into the separate cabin that was the kitchen at the back of the porch. Then we'd stop to look at the mountains. Lafayette, Artist Bluff, Bald, Cannon, Kinsman, blue against the sky, always dependably the same. Other things changed, but not the line of the mountains, waiting for us to climb them once more. Then in the living room, the huge fireplace with its andirons 3 feet high, the green china clock on the mantel, the guns in their niche, the fishing rods cradled in bent wood hooks suspended from the ceiling, the Texas longhorns, the deer head, the portrait of Uncle Will on the wall, the rocking chairs where Grandpa and Grandma Howard always sat by the heavy writing table, which Uncle Will had made with his own hands, the converted kerosene lamps, the little melodeon which we used for accompaniment at our Sunday evening hymn sings. The natives came to these hymn sings. I remember one little old lady who, when we would hand her a hymn book, she'd say, "I can't sing half's good's a crow." A cushioned settee with a lid that lifted to reveal a furry mechanical bear, a black lace parasol, a wonderful music box, probably worth thousands of dollars now, and a mummified human child's foot that I have in my living room at home. All of these things were where they belonged. Nothing had changed. In the back parlor were the crumbling, leather-bound books, a set of bells, a stereopticon with magic pictures of ice caves and frozen waterfalls, astonishing in the perfection and depth of each gleaming crystal. And then there was that wonderful little room with the bird's-eye maple and bamboo furniture where I always slept, snuggling down under a feather quilt and listening to the wind in the white pines, the sound of the river flowing over the stones. And there was a poem tacked to the wall that I memorized, "Sleep sweetly in this quiet room, O thou whoe'er thou art." And best of all, I think, was the smell of that place. Old wood, old leather, old books, the perfume of pine and balsam and wood smoke. How were we to say goodbye to that place? How could we accept the sadness of its going on the market? By making it, as Alexander Schmemann says, of time the object of our Christian faith and action. By recognizing that time has two dimensions, it brings things to an end and it gives us new beginnings. Christ is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, and we bring to him all of our beginnings, all of our endings, all the hope and sadness that they cause us, all of the work done and the pleasures enjoyed, as well as our plans for work to be done and pleasures to be enjoyed. All that was ever ours is ours forever. That's the phrase from which the title of the book is taken that contains the essay about the cottage. All that was ever ours is ours forever.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.